The next case of the morning is number 044144 and 4234, Vision Church against the Village of Long Grove. Mr. Norman.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Council. Thank you for the opportunity to appear here. It's really an honor to do that. I want to start out, by referring to short appendix page 17 and would encourage the court to take a good look at this. And when you see this photo, I would ask you to consider three things, which I'll be addressing in my opening statement here today. One is unequal treatment. A second thing is exclusion, unlawful exclusion. And the third thing is vested rights. And I will proceed with that. I want the court to take notice, though. I would ask you to take notice that this school structure to the north of Vision's property is the largest structure in the Village of Long Grove in all 18 square miles. The development, including the building and the surrounding area, is three times the size of the larger of Vision's two plans that were proposed, a 99,000 square foot plan, more than four times the size of the smaller plan, the 56,200 foot square proposal that Vision made.
Mr. Norman, could I ask you just one tiny clarifying question?
Yes, ma'am.
When you speak of either the 99,000 square foot plan or the 56,200 square foot plan, are we talking about the perimeter around the buildings, or are we talking about the combined square footage of each of the they are all multiple building plans. So are we just adding up, you know, X square feet in this building and Y square feet in that building?
It's not the perimeter.
It's not the perimeter.
It's the square footage of all the buildings plus sidewalks and parking lots, essentially.
So that's the number that goes to make up either of those two numbers.
Yes.
And that's a consistent way of measuring the schools.
Yes, and if you look at the schools, they're just if you count all of the what's called impervious surfaces. That is not natural surfaces. It's just under 400,000 square feet.
Okay. And is it your position that the village is somehow stopped from controlling building projects that are equal to or less than the size of the schools? I mean, having approved the schools, are they now sort of stuck with that as the benchmark forever, or can they continue with their land use planning?
Well, the answer is it depends on the use that's being compared to it. If it's a pizza parlor, they have complete control over that, rational basis control. If we're talking about a constitutionally protected right or a right under Section B1 of RLUIPA, which is the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, the standard is different. And let me answer your question by reading Section B1 of that statute. It's called Equal Terms. And it says, no government shall impose or implement a land use regulation in a manner that treats a religious assembly or institution on less than equal terms with a non-religious assembly or institution. So I wanted to be clear that we're talking about a national standard established by Congress. The law.
Well, how much comparability do you have to show before you apply that standard?
Under
the school district is completely incomparable to the church, as far as I can make out. So
well,
I don't
understand why
this comparison is relevant to anything.
The comparison is relevant because Congress says it is, and if I might respectfully say,
well, they didn't say that. I just asked you. I mean, how much comparability do the institutions have before you violate the Constitution by approving one and not the other?
Well, the question is are both assemblies or institutions? I would refer you to the Midrash Sephardi case where the 11th Circuit gave the definitions. An assembly, excuse me, Your Honor.
I mean, just because you have a big school, does that mean you got to have approve all the big churches that are proposed in
no.
the area?
No, it means
seems
that
to be what you're saying.
It's right across the street, and it affects the same property. Now, I really don't like to read, but if I can read the village's own ordinance from June of 2000, just the conclusion, the whereas clause, that they enacted, which was the same month when Vision first started to deal with the village of Long Grove. They concluded that as to the in granting a special use to the schools, the village board has determined that the proposed special use is consistent with the particular physical surroundings of the property and that the granting of the special use will not be detrimental to the public welfare or injurious to other property owners in the vicinity of the property. The record, Your Honor, is undisputed that there are only three governmental interests that were asserted by Long Grove in this case. One had to do with property values, and I would refer you to SA 75. The record is undisputed that neither the school property, the school development, or either of the Vision Church developments would have any impact on real estate values. The second interest is traffic. And it's undisputed that the schools will have a far greater, because they meet during the week and Vision's main meeting is on Sunday, will have a far greater, impact on traffic than Vision does. And the final thing, again, the record is undisputed, is the visual impact of these two projects, which equates to the size of the projects. The schools are clearly visible, and again, I would refer you to that photograph from the west to at least 40 homes there. To the east, for dozens of homes, it's visible. And only the steeple of the church, again, the record is essentially undisputed on this, only the top part of the steeple would be visible to any property.
Why aren't you just asking us to be a zoning board at this point? I mean,
well, respectfully, Your Honor,
we're going to look at all these factors and make a decision about zoning.
We're not asking you. Again, these are standards that are imposed under RLUIPA and the First Amendment. And we respectfully assert that there are standards here that have been violated, the equal treatment. Now, also,
Can I just say, one of the things I think that is a little baffling looking at this record, once the village has passed this public assembly ordinance, which I understand you're attacking in various ways, but once they pass that, there are all different kinds of uses that are covered by it. And for a mere 1,200 less square feet than one of the plans you advanced, you could have complied with that ordinance. How can their religious practice be burdened by something that's 55,000 square feet?
Judge, respectfully, you're incorrect, and please allow me to straighten this out. All we wanted to do was build a church. If we would have had permission to build a church at 55,000 square feet, we'd have done it in a heartbeat.
But why didn't you come back to them with a 55,000 square foot plan?
There was no right to build under the public assembly ordinance. If it gave us a right to build, we would have done that. But the public assembly ordinance provided only that we could commence a fourth special use proceeding. And we'd already provided one with a 56,200 square foot plan, which was rejected 8 months before. There was no reason that there's nothing to say that we would have been approved. Because
I understand that you're drawing a distinction between a use of right, as you might have had in Lake County before the annexation, and the ability to qualify for a special use. But the fact is, the village had pinned itself down, too, that ordinance.
Please read the ordinance, and let me be clear with you. They pinned Vision Church down.
Well, I'm saying the ordinance creates standards that the village will now, whether it's a Boy Scout camp that wants to build itself there, or whether it's this church, or whether it's the national headquarters of a sorority, or whatever it may be, the village has now said 55,000 square feet on a road that on a property that abuts a county road is something consistent with our plan.
Yes, Your Honor. We had already seen the process, and let me talk about exclusion, because these all tie together. The special use process, permitting process that they applied to our client was not a fair and objective one. And they'd remember, they'd already been through three zoning proceedings before the public assembly ordinance was enacted, after we had applied for that third one, so arguably it didn't even apply to our case. But it only said that it applies to special uses, and it kept in the special use requirement. Now, we had been through two special use proceedings with them, and if I can refer you to SA 55, where they imposed, and indeed we agreed to 50 conditions to approval in this process. About 30 of them are contained in a letter of July 10th from the village manager. If you look at those, only one of those 30 are rooted in the zoning code. All the rest of them were ad hoc, moving target types of requirements, including two that would entangle the village and religious practices of our client, saying that we were required, and I would look at points 6 and 7, and it's SA 55 to 57, that we were allowed to have only two services on Sundays or holidays, no more than one major activity during the week, and that anything beyond that, we had to come to the board for village approval. And so, and that's clearly an entanglement. That's clearly not something that the Lemon Authority would
allow. At this
stage
in the litigation, what is the significance of those two factors?
Well, it's illustrative of much detail that we provide in the record to show that there was never a fair process. We have no disagreement. I mean, even
are you offering that as proof of anti-religious animus or animus against this particular church?
Well, we can, as to the particular church, the village has admitted that there is no record of any of the six extant churches in Long Grove having gone through a special use permitting process at all. So we are being treated different than other churches.
But isn't that just a difference in time?
It is a difference in time, but it's also a matter of discrimination for a small church that's wanting to come in at this point. It's
right,
a different
standard. This is part of the United Methodist Church, is it not?
It is, and it's a large denomination, but this particular church has gone through, we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, we've lost roughly 300 members, and again, this is not disputed.
Is there another Methodist church in this village?
Not that I'm aware of.
Is this church designed to serve the people of a particular locality, or from what area will it draw its membership?
The Korean community has in large degree moved into the northwest suburbs, so it would be serving the Korean. It's primarily a Korean church serving a Korean community in that part of...
Fair to characterize it as a regional center as opposed to a center based in one particular community?
Well, that's how the village has tried to characterize it. We don't see it that way. I mean, this is
how do you see it?
This is a church that is devoted to the Korean community to provide the services that they need. They have a number of members who live in the vicinity of the church, wherever it's been located. They certainly don't all live. They wouldn't all live in Long Grove, but the fact is that they would probably. The vast majority, and this is true of most churches, would live within 20 minutes of that's just a statistical reality.
Are there other such establishments run by the Methodist Church in the greater Chicago area?
Well, it's not an establishment run by the greater Methodist Church. This is a single congregation-controlled local church. They are...
All right, well, are there similar entities...
There are many Methodist
of
churches.
Methodist affiliation.
Yes, it's just a single church, which is controlled by the congregation.
So it doesn't draw from an area wider than most Methodist churches. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay, that was not clear in the brief, and I'm glad you cleared that up.
Thanks. Finally, I do want to make the point that the church invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in loan servicing and also in architects and engineers' fees, attorneys' fees, in reliance on the permitted use with the county. Now, as of November of 2000, when things were not going well with Long Grove, they applied to the county. And they knew under that ordinance that there was no zoning question. They could have a church. And based on Illinois law, because they invested in reasonable reliance on that, all that money, they acquired what's called a vested right. And that vested
right... Doesn't that require an extension, though, of where the Illinois courts have been on this vested rights? Because once the land is annexed, it's certainly under Illinois law the prerogative of the village to govern land use decisions.
Well, on what term, though? Under no Illinois case has ruled on instance exactly like this.
Well, I guess that's what I was getting to.
Which is why we... But no court has turned it down either in Illinois, which is why we refer to the Nemers case, the Eighth Circuit case, on this point, which construes Iowa law, which is essentially the same. And let me just specifically say, it is clear from the Illinois Supreme Court repeatedly saying it, that a vested right is a property right. It runs with the land. So it would not be... it would not be disrupted by annexation. In other words, it's a property right that inures and stays with the landowner or with the land. Your Honors, I just noticed I'm running into Mr. Whitworth's time, so I would stop at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Norman.
Thank you.
Mr. Whitworth.
May I please the court and counsel? I'm Sam Whitworth, General Counsel for the United Methodist Bishop of Chicago and for the Northern Illinois Conference of Local United Methodist Churches. They intervened because one of the prime functions of our bishop and conference is to give protection and to nurture local congregations, and particularly fledgling churches, ethnic and immigrant-based congregations that are seeking to get a foothold. And to help them achieve a status where they are on an equal footing with other more established and mainline, shall we say, local churches.
Is there a contention in this case that there's any discrimination on the basis of ethnicity?
Those who attended meetings in the community would say yes, but we do not depend on that contention today. In part because the RLUIPA statute, for one, is impact-driven. It is not one dependent on making an actual showing of animus. It's very important that RLUIPA starts with a testing for burden, and then if there is burden, inferences arise, and the need for strict scrutiny arises, and the need for the village to come back and say, here are our compelling causes, and here is how we tried to do this in a least intrusive way.
Could I ask you, in terms of any reason to believe that this congregation will need a 99,000 square foot church in the
yes, and I think the Reiner
future is that a reasonable expectation?
Yes, I think the Reiner study, which was a very thoughtful study in the record, showed a trajectory and a rationally based upward line on membership that would get you up past 750 and on to 1,000 after the year 2005, had they been able to get a foothold in the year 2000 when they started. There is a very rational basis for believing, and I don't believe it's contradicted, that this church would have achieved 750 to 1,000 members, and this would have been a perfectly appropriate campus for such a church, especially in that wide open area where most residents would only see a steeple. Judge Wood, you asked the question about the assembly ordinance. That assembly ordinance is suspect because it was highly targeted. They talked about aquariums and museums as illustrative uses, but the only thing on the horizon at the time they put that in was Vision Church. And Vision Church was trying to put up a campus about a third of the size of the school right across the road. And you heard the findings that were made,
now,
the legislative findings.
That school's been there a long time, hasn't it?
I'm sorry,
that
Judge.
That school's been there for quite a while.
It it was annexed in about the same month that the Vision tried to first applied for permission to be there. That was about June of 2000.
But it was in existence at the time. The school had already been built and was operating as a school, or the two schools.
They were, but I don't think that that distinction is really important in this case. They made findings that would make it very difficult for them now to show why a third as large a campus across the street in that wide open area was unacceptable to them. The only thing they ever say about their premise for what they did is that they have a charter that gives great value to wide open country living and ambience the equestrian estate area of Long Grove.
But it does seem that your position is, having given that up with respect to the school campus, they now have to give it up with respect to any other large parcel of land within the jurisdiction of the village. And sooner or later, of course, that would destroy the character of the village.
I would never say that they have to go on a foot-for-foot basis because the school was there. But I think it surely raises questions as to what was going on with this local church. And may I just say two final things. On brief, Long Grove makes, I think, two errors of interpretation about the RLUIPA statute. One is that for purposes of weighing this equal treatment section of the Act, that the public school is not an assembly institution. The actual words of the statute are non-religious assembly institution. I just think that's untenable. Equally untenable is their repeated argument that since they worked under the mantle of annexation, that annexation isn't a covered regulatory act under RLUIPA. Annexation is the fulcrum of zoning. And RLUIPA, in its definition, says a regulatory act covered by this statute is zoning, landmarking, and applications of such measures which restrict or limit religious institutions in building and developing.
Mr. Whitwer, your time has expired.
I thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll have the clerk give counsel for the appellee two additional minutes, please, to equal things out.
Thank you, Your Honor. Adam Kingsley on behalf of the Village of Long Grove. Your Honors, this is not a case about freedom of worship. It is a zoning dispute about the size of plaintiff's church. Now, as Judge Wood, as you pointed out, under the public assembly ordinance, they are entitled to a 55,000-square-foot facility.
But they actually point out they're not entitled. It's not as though you said in R2 zones, 55,000-square-foot churches are now permitted uses. They're entitled to apply, right?
That's correct, and it is clear that a 55,000-square-foot facility would meet that element of the public assembly ordinance. There are other elements of the public assembly ordinance, including setback and cubic footage, but there's no reason to believe that they could not meet those elements of the ordinance and, in fact, operate a 55,000-square-foot church complex. And I should say this is a church complex. Under
right,
the 55,000-square-foot plan, there were three buildings.
We understand that. I guess the argument that they make that gives me a great deal of pause is this moving goalposts argument, that every time they came up with a plan, the village found some other reason to disapprove that plan or to throw up more obstacles, and suddenly it's, you know, doing an involuntary annexation, it's passing the public assembly ordinance, and it's very expensive to go through these procedures over and over again.
I think it's important to understand how what happened in 2001 differed from the passage of the public assembly ordinance in 2002. There's no doubt now that they are in the village and that the public assembly ordinance controls and that a 55,000-square-foot facility would meet the public assembly ordinance. What was going on in 2001 was a very different situation. It was a negotiated annexation agreement. They were outside the village. They wanted to be in the village. And annexation under Illinois, or voluntary annexation under Illinois law, is really a contractual negotiation between two parties. We'd like to come into the village. We'd like to develop this. And there was a series of conversations back and forth regarding development.
No, I understand that difference, but it's my impression anyway, which certainly could be wrong, that if the village were willing today to say, if you give us a 55,000-square-foot plan that complies with the setbacks and the various objective criteria in the ordinance, we will approve your use, they would probably breathe a sigh of relief and give you the 55,000-square-foot plan. I think their concern is that nothing like that exists either as a matter of right under the ordinance or as a matter of any kind of contractual or estoppel-like statement the village has made.
Well, let me go back to a comment you made about what they call changing the goalposts or moving the goalposts. In 2001, when the annexation negotiations were going on, they started with a 99,000-square-foot plan. They came down to 59,000 feet. And we said, we may approve this, but we want you to know that we expect this to be the maximum. we expect if we approve this plan, you're not going to come back for more. And what we'd like you to do is to commit to that in writing and say that this is the greatest plan that we are going to submit to the village.
Why should they have had to agree to that, though? Because the truth is, 10 years from now, people in the village themselves might feel differently about it. I mean, you know, if, in fact, growth in this congregation occurs at the rate that some people think it's going to occur, there could come a time in 5 years or 10 years that they might feel that that was quite undesirable, since they're sitting on 27.5 acres, if I remember, 27.4.
You're correct, but as part of the annexation negotiations, the village wanted to make sure and wanted to be up front with the church and said, let's make sure we're all on the same page and that we are approving a 59,000-square-foot facility. It's the church who walked away from that and said, no, we're not going to commit to that. And in fact, the plans that they filed subsequently were both 99,000-square-feet plans. So the village wanted to be up front with the church, wanted to let them know what the expectations were, and wanted to make sure that the village, that the church really would be satisfied with the 59,000 square foot facility.
I'm asking you, why should the church have to agree to that when they're hopeful that there will be growth, when in fact even the 99,000 plan is significantly more modest than the school complex across the street?
Well, it was meant to be a sign that everybody was on the same page.
Right, but their point is, we don't want to cap the growth of this congregation. Why should they have to do that?
Of course, a 59,000 square foot complex, by the testimony of their own architect, was more than sufficient. This was a 250 at most congregation. Their own church architect said that 40,000 square feet would be enough, and that a 99,000 square foot church was sufficient for a congregation of 1,000.
Which we just heard they thought they could get.
They thought they could get, but their church architect and even a member of the Northern Conference said that those growth estimates were unrealistic. But the bottom line is there's no indication that any of this was based upon animus. I mean, fundamentally, we're talking about an alleged First Amendment violation here.
Whatever RLUIPA, too. Where does RLUIPA go for animus?
Let me get to two points of RLUIPA. One, there's no substantial burden. There's been no suggestion that a 55,000-square-foot church would be not large enough. Under Club, this court has held that even if a church can't get their preferred site, there's no RLUIPA violation. Here we're not talking about a site, we're talking about size. And there's no suggestion that 55,000 is a substantial burden. Let me talk about the schools, because this is important. The schools were built in unincorporated Lake County. They were not annexed until after they were constructed. At the time they were constructed, the village did not have any type of approval, a zoning or building approval, over those schools. Nor could it have exercised annexation, because the school district's property was above 60 acres. Therefore, involuntary annexation was not a possibility. So there was no control, no possible control over school development. After the schools were developed, at that point in time, the district came to the village and said, we have these developed schools. We would like to come into the village. That's when the annexation negotiations between the school and the village took place. At that point in time, obviously, the village didn't have a lot of options. The schools were already built. But given that situation, the village did negotiate an annexation agreement and did gain certain control over further school development. Now, that is not a comparable situation, whereas in the court's parlance, there's no similar situation or no similarity between the situation of the church and the situation of the schools.
What's the big advantage? Is it sewer connections? Why would you want to be annexed to the village anyway?
You would have to ask the church that. I don't know. I don't think it's sewer connections. I think it may be a question of Longgrove's name and the fact that they are a recognized village and there was some prestige to being within the village of Longgrove. I would also point out that even if there was some similarity, we're talking about functionally different uses. As Judge Cudahy pointed out, we're talking about a public school that serves not only Longgrove but the regional community versus a private institution. Even if there was some similarity, certainly it would be rational for the village to prefer a public school over a private institution. Again, that's rational and does not show any animus. And I think we have to get back to the animus part of this, that there's never been any inclination, and none of the evidence can demonstrate that there was animus regarding vision because of its religion. Again, as the Pro-Eco case points out, if a developer comes in and you're concerned about that development, a municipality can take legislative action, generally applicable legislative action, like the public assembly ordinance, to prevent that particular development. And that does not show animus against the developer. And it certainly does not show animus against the developer because of the developer's religion. Whatever the village did here, they did because of planning concerns, growth concerns, consistent with their long-term comprehensive plan and their rural philosophy. Nothing that they did here could set to be animus because of religion or the activities that would take place inside Vision's Church.
Can I take it? No one else, you know, the Girl Scouts or a community college, or no one else has proposed to the village a development of comparable size? Because it seems to me your argument is whatever was done on the basis of size and scale, not on the basis of religion. And so we have to decide, since they coincide here, we have to decide.
That is correct. This was one of the, if not the largest facilities that was proposed in the village. Now, the village is still rural and still largely undeveloped, so it is possible that another entity can in fact come in. There's a lot of land in the village to be developed. So this is not a concern that is related just to this particular project. This is a concern that the village is going to have going forward in the future. I should add that the public assembly ordinance has been in fact applied to other institutions. There was a private school. It did not have the same size facility. It fit within the neighborhood classification, which is the smallest classification. But the village did apply the public assembly ordinance to the private school in 2002, shortly after the ordinance is passed. So this is a generally applicable ordinance, and anybody who comes in is going to be subject to this ordinance going forward. I just want to make clear that annexation is a different animal than an ordinance that gets passed. Under the Illinois statutes, annexation, especially voluntary annexation, again, is something is of a contractual nature. And so what was going on in 2001 was very different. Mr. Norman suggested that they would be happy to build a 55,000-square-foot church. We would be happy to have them in the community with a 55,000-square-foot church. The fact is that they never committed themselves, neither in 2001 or in 2002, to building a 55,000-square-foot church. In fact, in 2002, after the public assembly ordinance had been passed, after they knew what our standards are, they insisted that we vote on their 99,000-square-foot plan. And, of course, we had no choice but to deny that because that did not fit within the public assembly ordinance. We think they could probably meet the terms, both the terms of the public assembly ordinance and any other standards that might be out there, and we invite them to come apply at 55,000 square feet. We would like to have them in the village. There's no reason they shouldn't be in the village, but they should not be able to insist upon a 99,000 square foot complex. One thing I do want to comment on were two points that were raised regarding the suggested negotiation conditions during the annexation. And I believe it was referred to as points 6 and 7 that were in the letter that the village manager, Cal Doty, sent, saying, here are some concerns that have been raised. Will you agree to them? Again, those were just kind of proposed terms that were bandied back and forth. I think that the major term that made the annexation negotiations founder was the church's refusal to commit to the plan that they had on the table. But with respect to these two particular conditions, they were not designed to influence the content or regulate the content of what went on in the church. They were essentially a time, place, and manner conditions, which is if you're going to have a large festival or something out of the ordinary, for traffic reasons, for public safety reasons, we simply want to be able, the village wants to be able to know about that. And under the McDonald case and other permitting cases, it's obvious that a municipality has a right to apply content-neutral regulations to a permitting situation, and that's exactly what those two conditions were getting at. They were not designed to affect at all the content of what happened within the church.
Well, and I would note also Mr. Doty's cover letter says the list refers to various documents and conditions discussed over the period of review in this project, and he invites comments, what's agreeable to you, what needs modification, what's unacceptable.
This was still negotiations, and I would also point out that even though in March of 2001 the church seemed somewhat amenable to the majority of these negotiations, at the end of the March hearing, the village asked, okay, you've made a lot of oral commitments. Let's see your new plans. Let's see your new elevations. So, we know exactly what we're talking about. Those plans and elevations were never forthcoming. Instead, the village said, we're done. All right, we insist that you vote now and you vote on our plan. The church said that. In fact, it was the day before the hearing was scheduled that we finally got a response from Mr. Shepro where he said, we don't agree, vote now. And again, in the context of a negotiated annexation agreement, the terms were not to our liking, and we voted to deny the annexation. Now that the church is within the village, the public assembly ordinance controls, and we invite them to come in and apply. And if you have no further questions, then I'll end my argument.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Norman have? You have 2 minutes, sir.
Boy, I can't disagree strongly enough. We would have built the church had we had a chance. We didn't come in and tell them we're not going to supply the plans. Look at Mr. Doty's letter. The last item on Mr. Doty's letter says we can submit the plans later before a final approval. It doesn't say that we had to submit them before. We never refused to build anything that we were given the opportunity to do. And council stands here and tells us that they can apply now and come in. This would be the fourth zoning process. Under this court's New Berlin authority, it was substantial burden just to have to go through a second one. And again, there's no assurance of any kind. We agree with the moving goalposts. They could do the same thing. They could even use, as they did with the assembly ordinance, to try to bargain us down to 25,000 square feet and turn us down because we won't go below 30. I mean, this is the kind of thing we were dealing with the whole time, and it's very disingenuous for council to stand up here and say otherwise. I want to make it clear that we also meet the club test of effectively impracticable because the special use permitting process as applied to us kept us out. We tried and tried and tried and couldn't get through. Judge Cudahy, I want to specifically address your question about the comparison with the schools. The schools are across the street. They're right next to our church. We're not saying that the village is held to that standard all over the village. We're just saying we're across the street, and that standard applies because it's the same neighborhood, and the impacts are measurable from one to the other, and there's no similarly situated test under RLUIPA. I want to make clear, we don't have to show that. We only have to show that that they were both assemblies or institutions. I would refer you to the Midrash case for that. Finally, the relief
room. Kind of make us into the zoning board, though. We've got to decide how comparable
they are. I've been reading that, and we don't want to do that, but there are constitutional and federal questions here. We are asking that this court enforce the right to build as it did in New Berlin, the same kind of standard that was applied there with all the delay. We want the right to build in accordance with that vested right that accrued in November of 2000 when Vision was permitted to build a church as of right and began investing those hundreds of thousands of dollars. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dorman.
You're welcome.
I think everyone has had their allotted time, and therefore the case will be taken under advisement. And with our thanks to all counsel for their very fine